WMAL News at 7. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. If you go to fill up your gas tank in Maryland today, it won't cost you as much. Maryland's 36-cent a gallon gas tax is suspended through April 16th under emergency legislation signed yesterday by Governor Larry Hogan. Today, the average for a gallon of regular in Maryland's D.C. suburbs is $4.03. That's down from an average of $4.25 yesterday before prices dropped.
As we continue to stand in solidarity against Russian aggression in Ukraine, and as Marylanders face the impact of surging inflation, with the average price of gas rapidly rising, this bipartisan action will provide some relief from the pain at the pump.
Comptroller Peter Franchot says the gas tax holiday will save drivers $100 million. It's calmer in Ukraine this morning after a violent night yesterday.
In the capital, Kyiv, again, there was heavy shelling. That shelling coming largely from tanks which are stalled, as we understand it, at a closest about 9 miles from the city center of Kyiv. But that is plenty within range of those tank guns. Obviously, Kyiv has seen missile strike after missile strike too, and the targets continue to include civilian ones. There were civilians killed and injured again.
Fox's Jonathan Hunt. Four U.S. soldiers are killed in a plane crash in Norway yesterday. It was part of a NATO exercise. The training had nothing to do with the war in Ukraine. No word yet on what caused the crash, but Norwegian police say the weather was bad. If you see a lot of first responders near the Trailside Middle School, Stonebridge High School, and Newton Lee Elementary Schools in Loudoun County today, you do not need to worry. The sheriff's office is doing an emergency response training exercise to prepare in case there's an active shooter inside a school. The drill runs from 8 a.m. to noon. Creatures great and small are welcome at the Dulles Expo Center this weekend.
We have people that come in with snakes around their necks, and we have a woman that brings a capuchin monkey every year.
Eric Udler with the Super Pet Expo says the show features local vendors, celebrity animal trainers, a hermit crab, crabitat, and new this year, a butterfly exhibit.
And the butterflies will come right up to you.
People are encouraged to bring waste bags for their furry friends, but there's a team of poopers scoopers, just in case. Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
Another wild day of college basketball yesterday.
From the first four to the round of 32, 11 seed Notre Dame continues their run in the NCAA men's basketball tournament bracket, upsetting 6 seed Alabama 78-64. Not the only 11 seed pulling off the stunner as Iowa State takes down LSU 59-54. Fourth seed Illinois survived a scare from 13 seed Chattanooga, holding the lead for just 25 seconds in regulation, but coming away with a 54-53 victory. 10th seed Miami and 9th seed TCU were able to advance on to the round of 32 alongside Arizona, Villanova, Houston, Michigan State, Texas, Auburn, Texas Tech, Ohio State, Purdue, and Duke as Coach K begins his final dance. Matt Napolitano, Fox News.
In other sports news, the Caps beat the Hurricanes, the Wizards fell to the Knicks. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Montgomery County, on the inner loop of the Beltway in Silver Spring, accident has been reported near Georgia Avenue. On 270 southbound in Montgomery County, there is road construction in Gaithersburg. Two lanes are blocked at 370. In Prince George's County, between the two beltways, no delays on the BW Parkway or 95. Route 50 in Prince George's County is clear between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge. And at the Bay Bridge, you got two lanes headed east and three lanes coming west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, scattered showers, then severe thunderstorms, a high of 77. Tonight, scattered showers, then partly cloudy, a low 48. Tomorrow, increasing clouds, a high near 61. Right now, 59 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is hour two of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi starts us off each 7 o'clock hour. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, we've seen the tragic war in Ukraine as it continues into its 24th day. And there are really two wars going on. Obviously, the military conflict, the horrific attacks, the death and destruction in Ukraine, but also the propaganda war. And each of the leaders, Vladimir Putin and Volodymyr Zelensky, are doing everything they can to rally support. And I wanted you to walk us through it. First, President Zelensky, he's had a unique approach. It's been extremely effective. And walk us through the strategy as he has gained such support, not only from his own people, but from the global community.
That's true, Rick. And part of this is due to the fact that at 44, he's hip when it comes to media. President Zelensky knows about podcasts. He knows how to work the net. He knows how to use Twitter, Facebook, Instagram to reach audiences worldwide, and he does it with consistency. Let me give you an example. On one day, he's addressing the British members of Parliament. The next day, it's the Canadian Parliament, and then the U.S. Congress, which resulted in a very handsome aid package with a total of $800 million. And then, for good measure, he goes and speaks to the German Bundestag and takes to task Chancellor Olaf Scholz for not doing enough because he still wants to deal with Putin, according to Zelensky. He uses sound bites in particular, noting that one country's civil rights leader, without naming him, said, "I have a dream." And then he told the U.S. Congress, "I have a need." And that's when he came in with the strong pitch for the aid he eventually got. When he speaks to Britain, he spices his remarks with quotes from Winston Churchill and William Shakespeare. In other words, he can tailor make a message for an audience and sculpt a soundbite. And it's very, very effective. All the world's eyes are on Volodymyr Zelensky, and he wins friends and influences government by the day.
Let's look at Vladimir Putin. You've followed him for decades. And the things that he is doing now to try and rally the support of his own people, give us some insight. Number one, if you're in touch with any of your colleagues and contacts in Russia, what's really going on there in terms of how the people feel about Putin? And what is he doing to maintain their support while he has a real problem on his hands with the struggling military?
Orwellian is the term that one correspondent, a former bureau chief in Moscow, used to describe the situation in Russia at this point as the Russo-Ukrainian war continues. Very much like George Orwell's 1984, people are only told what the government wants them to hear as news. Facebook, Twitter, and other forms of social media are blocked out. And it may be that some of the speeches by President Zelensky of Ukraine, who is very comfortable in Russian as a first language, never reached the people. Nor does the news that there are protests breaking out in major cities and the police have to subvert protesters. Now, recently, days ago, President Putin had a big rally to show support for his war on Ukraine, and there were crowds filling a stadium. This is televised, but again, the whole message of mass rallies, televising them, speaking behind a podium, it almost seems, shall we say, old-fashioned or even outmoded compared to the slick and very emotional sound bites that are coming from President Zelensky. Without the force of the Russian police and military, and without control over the media, Vladimir Putin would probably be facing overthrow at this point. And the public might even free someone who wanted to run against him in an election and is still in jail, Alexander Navalny, who nearly died as a result of what he says was the work of Putin's agents. But it is not to be. In any event, the world is getting a first-hand view at the way Putin operates, and people generally don't like it.
What effect and what influence, if any, do the oligarchs have on Putin and his future? We've seen their yachts confiscated. We've seen sanctions placed against them. Does this impact Putin?
The Financial Times reported on the oligarchs, the wealthy people around the Russian president last Saturday. The criminologist Anatole Levin speculated that these men, the so-called Siloviki, or men of force, might overthrow him. Others who watch it carefully don't agree. I talked to a Russian author who knows many of them personally, and he said, and I quote, "They are too scared, and they have no means to stage a coup. When it gets real hot, they'll run off to Dubai or wherever. Each of them has an escape plan, I am sure." They serve Vladimir Putin while he's in power, and while it seems that a long tenure is a foregone conclusion for the man in the Kremlin, when that becomes uncertain, they'll probably, to use a phrase of Pat Buchanan's, head for the high grass.
We hear the stories about Ukraine and the potential to actually join NATO. But you have an article that spells that out this week and explain that situation.
Let me come right to the point, Rick. It's moonshine. The whole fear that NATO would include Ukraine right along the Russian border has not happened and is unlikely to happen. President Zelensky said as much in his speech to the United Kingdom's Joint Expeditionary Force. In his words, "For years we've been hearing about how the door is supposedly open to NATO membership, but now we hear that we cannot enter. And it is true, and it must be acknowledged." In other words, it is not going to go into the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and there's a very good reason. It doesn't meet the requirements of the NATO Charter. According to Article 10 of the Charter, states which have ethnic disputes or external territorial disputes must settle those disputes by peaceful means in accordance with the principles of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the OSCE being an international organization including more than 50 countries. And it makes it very clear that resolution of such disputes would be a factor in determining whether a state can join NATO. Now, the dispute continues, and even when the firing stops, the dispute will continue over two Russian-speaking provinces that Russia wants to be independent or part of Russia's Russian Federation. In other words, as long as these disputes occur, there's no NATO in Ukraine, and no talks, no negotiations are going to change this.
We've seen Kim Jong-un acting up recently, firing missiles from time to time. There has been an election in South Korea. A new president will be in office. What does that mean for relations with the North, and what does that mean for relations with the U.S.?
They have a hardliner on the North in the new president, Yung Suk-yeol. He was a tough prosecutor, the law and order man who served as the chief prosecutor of South Korea, and he prosecuted people of all parties. He ran on the conservative ticket, was narrowly elected, and he succeeds President Moon Jae-in. Moon made little secret of his desire for reunification with the North. He even had a minister of reunification, and according to Gordon Chang, author, Far East expert, and a guest on WMAL, Moon wanted to be the last president of South Korea. In addition, in total contrast, Yoon, the new president, has vowed to, and I quote, annihilate communism, and said that if the North continues to fire missiles, it means we are already in a state of war. His words.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. You can follow him every day on Twitter at John Gizzi. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. And today, I'm feeling especially happy 2 days after we celebrated the birthday of the most important person in my life and who made it truly worth living, my wife, the Honorable Colleen House.
And a happy birthday from all of us here to Colleen. Very nice, John. It is 7:19. It is a Saturday morning update on WMAL. Cheryl Atkinson coming up next. Then we got Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland. But right now, Al BD is in the WMAL Traffic Center.
It's good morning on the Virginia side of the Beltway. I just looked at the cameras. I didn't see any crashes. I don't have any reports of any construction being set up on the inner loop or on the outer loop. On 66 in Fairfax County, you're at speed eastbound and westbound. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, you're not tapping the brakes in either direction. And finally, in the district, on 295, 395, and 695, all lanes are clear and at speed. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies this morning, a chance for a couple of isolated showers across the region. But as we head towards the afternoon, skies will clear, temperatures warm into the mid and upper 70s ahead of a cold front that'll shift through later on this afternoon and evening. There are a chance for a couple of storms later on this evening, closer to sunset. A few of those could be on the stronger side, something Stormwatch 7 will be watching very closely. Later on tonight, 40s and 50s across the region under mostly clear skies. Will be partly sunny to at times mostly cloudy on your Sunday. A little bit more cooler, but also seasonably so. High temperatures tomorrow around 60 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
It is 58 degrees in the nation's capital, 720 on the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us this morning. Cheryl Atkinson joins us each week. And, of course, she hosts Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. And, of course, she has her blog, CherylAtkinson.com. Good morning.
Good morning.
You know, we've seen so much controversy about oil prices and the blame game. And we also recall from the election campaign the Democrats saying they wanted to put the oil industry out of business and would not be particularly conducive to expanding our oil production. But now we're looking to the Mideast because of the shortage in this country. Isn't there a place closer? If you're not going to be user-friendly for the U.S. oil industry, don't we have somewhere else to go besides the Mideast?
You know, before we get to that, I've been thinking sort of along the lines as with the border crisis. The Biden administration hasn't taken any public measures to crack down on illegal immigration, knowing that we have historic record-breaking illegal immigration. Maybe it's going according to plan. Same perhaps with the oil and gas prices. They have expressed, Democrats in the past, they want the price of gas to go up so high that it forces people not to use their fossil fuel vehicles. So, as you mentioned, they're looking to other countries, not the U.S., when it comes time to think about ramping up production to help with all of these price crisis issues. And yes, there are apparently other places that we could be going besides places like Saudi Arabia and other OPEC countries and Venezuela. And one of those places is Canada. So this week on our show, we went to Canada, the province of Alberta, which is apparently sitting on oil reserves that are the size of Texas's oil reserves. And they've offered to help. And they're basically saying, much like the U.S. oil producers, hey, Biden administration, why not get your oil from friendly people that mean you the best rather than countries that aren't necessarily looking out for your interests? So we'll talk about that tomorrow, the fact that Canada's offered to step up, but their offer's gone unanswered so far from the Biden administration.
Have they just basically ignored the offers, or have they offered any reasons?
Well, we asked the White House and didn't get a response by the time, you know, we put this story to bed. Asked them why they haven't turned to Canada, but Canada simply told us, we spoke to the energy minister or the equivalent of the energy secretary in Alberta, and they simply said they haven't been asked in any capacity, like what they can do to make up for some of the slack when we've stopped importing from Russia.
There has been a lot of controversy about a new Alzheimer's drug. It is Aduhelm, and there's a big question mark about the cost, the efficiency, and a lot of talk about, is it a groundbreaking drug or not? And you look into it tomorrow, so what did you find?
Well, you know, we started covering this last year when we learned that this drug, which carries so much potential promise, because it would be the first one that treats the root cause of Alzheimer's, not just the symptoms. Big deal. But it was approved by the FDA over the advice of all of its advisors. Every single advisor for the FDA at the meeting they convened said it was not something that should go to market, that there was not sufficient proof that it works, and there are a lot of serious safety questions. Well, FDA approved it anyway, and now there are multiple investigations going on as to why the FDA did that. The drug company says, hey, it's safe and effective, but the fact is, even medical trade groups have recommended against it and said this is a travesty that it was approved on the flimsy evidence they say that it was approved for. You know, they didn't even finish one large study. Normally two are required before a drug can go to market. They didn't even have one. So, again, there's different views. The FDA and Biogen, the drug companies, say this is safe and effective, but a huge host of people say it's not, it could be dangerous, and we're following the controversy.
Tell us a little bit about the pricing on it.
Well, when it was first approved, this drug, this is another part of the controversy, was above $50,000 a year in cost per patient. So the idea was if Medicare started covering that for Alzheimer's patients, it could bankrupt the whole Medicare system very fast. That was another concern. And to do that for a drug that may have minimal to no effectiveness and possible harm, according to some experts, is really questionable. Well, with so few people prescribing the medicine, in December, the drug company cut the price in about half. They won't tell us how many patients are taking it. That's drug companies in general, for whatever reason, don't tell you, you know, how many patients they have on the drug. But they've made relatively very little money off of it through December of last year. And the big question now is the federal government's trying to decide whether to cover it and pay for it as part of Medicare. If they don't, that could be the death knell for the drug, even though it's on the market, because who can afford to pay that besides, you know, government insurance? And so far, by the way, the government has recommended only paying for that drug for elderly people with early Alzheimer's who are part of a clinical controlled study in a hospital setting. So that's almost nobody, and that's not going to be enough, experts say, to keep this drug on the market.
And you have a story about the U.S. Postal Service branching out possibly into another field.
You know, I thought this was interesting because Congress just passed a bipartisan postal reform bill that's supposed to help with some of the fiscal problems the post office always has. But amidst this, I learned from Representative James Comer, a member of Congress who has oversight on a lot of this stuff, that the post office has been operating, at the request of some Democrats, a pilot program that involves it getting into the banking business, doing things like gift cards and money cards and perhaps payday loans. And Comer thinks this is just crazy because the post office, he says, can't even do its main job right, losing all kinds of money, that why should it be going into the banking business? So we're going to talk about that with him.
No, it just seems like a couple of years ago, priority mail was pretty efficient. You'd get it like the second day. And now it does not appear to be a priority much longer for the post office these days.
So. Yeah, I mean, when you mail something now, instead of knowing it'll get there in a couple of days, and sometimes it does, it might not get there for a week or two. I think we all know that now.
Well, it'll be great when they start handling our money. The stories are tomorrow morning, ABC 7, 10 o'clock. Cheryl Atkinson, Full Measure. Thank you so much.
Have a great weekend.
You too. 727, Saturday morning update on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. A Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A warning from Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky to Russia today. The war will exact a toll on your country for generations. He said in a video overnight that Russia's deliberately creating a humanitarian catastrophe and asked Russian President Vladimir Putin to meet with him to put an end to the war that's targeting civilians. U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin says stopping it is the smartest thing Putin can do.
He's passed by a number of opportunities to off-ramp, de-escalate, and try to settle this through negotiations. And we call upon him to do so.
Austin talking at a news conference in Bulgaria. Some good news: if you need to get gas today in Maryland, it may cost you 36 cents less a gallon. The state suspended its gas tax yesterday afternoon. Before that, average in Maryland's D.C. suburbs was $4.25. Today, it's $4.03. Governor Larry Hogan says the emergency legislation signed into law yesterday
makes Maryland the first state in the nation to immediately suspend collection of the gas tax.
The gas tax holiday runs through April 16th. A U.S. Marine Osprey aircraft crashes in Norway last night, killing four U.S. soldiers. Fox's Jill Nato.
Norway's military said that aircraft was reported missing when it didn't make its scheduled arrival at the Arctic Circle municipality, Bodø. The Osprey was taking part in the military exercise NATO calls Cold Response 2022. That exercise aimed at training forces in harsh winter conditions.
It was not related to the war in Ukraine. WMAL Sports in the NCAA tournament. Notre Dame beats Alabama. Iowa State takes down LSU. Illinois beats Chattanooga. Miami, TCU, Arizona, Villanova, Houston, Ohio State, Purdue, Duke, Michigan State, Texas Tech, Auburn, and Texas advance to the round of 32. The Caps beat the Hurricanes. The Wizards fell to the Knicks. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway in Montgomery County, Silver Spring, Inner Loop, there is a crash. Two left lanes are blocked near Georgia Avenue. I have no reports of any crashes or construction on the outer loop of the Beltway in Montgomery County. In Prince George's County, you're not tapping the brakes on the Beltway, both on the Inner Loop and on the outer loop. In Prince George's County, between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and 95, I don't have any reports of any slowdowns in either direction. On Route 50 in Prince George's County, it's clear between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, both eastbound and westbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, scattered showers and severe thunderstorms, a high of 77. Right now, 59 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
7:36, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, former CIA-trained intel operative, the author of Operation Dark Heart, and the president of the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to be here with you.
Well, we have reports overnight that Russia says it has used hypersonic weapons, and of course, Russia makes a lot of claims that don't always turn out to be correct. But if they did, tell us a little bit about the impact and what that means in ratcheting up things.
Well, I, the use itself is not significant tactically. I mean, I think any number of weapons from artillery to tanks and even this, anything that they're using is going to continue to grind down the Ukrainian people. Notably, Rick, they have a lack of guided weapons, that is to say precision munitions. They've used a lot of what we call dumb bombs because they don't have the technology we have. So it's interesting you should do this. I think this is far more symbolic and meant to have a psychological effect than it is any tactical advantage it's going to gain them at this point. So it's like, yeah, okay, so what? At this point, it's not going to help them that much.
We're sending $800 million in new support to Ukraine.
Yeah.
President Zelensky, I thought he was pretty smart. He said, I'm not going to talk about what's in there because I want it to be a surprise for the Russians. We don't normally do things that way, and I thought it was kind of smart on his part not to discuss it. But maybe we should just touch base on the types of things that might go into a package like that and what it would mean in terms of his defense.
Well, the things that have worked, Stinger surface-to-air missiles and Javelin anti-tank rockets, those have been very effective. And people, I don't know if people understand this, each Javelin rocket costs more than the tank it's blowing up. I mean, these things are super high-tech. I'm completely serious. Like, you know, you're doubling the cost of any engagement by the fact you're using this. But one of the things I want to throw out there we're missing, and it's because of our own media, you know, we're talking about seeing the use of these things and being effective, Rick, because we've had such a Nazi-like removal of information regarding the other side. People can't see how good or bad the Russians are actually doing. The Russians have had made more, have continued to make progress. They've won some battles. They've actually captured some of these things in combat. We don't hear about this because the media is just pretending that we are not adult enough to understand when the Russians win things. Now, I am not pro-Russian, but it's a disservice to us to have a discussion like this and not have all available information for us to make a rational assessment of what's going on. So to answer your question, I think most of these weapons going in are going to be effective. We have to recognize that the Russians have won some, and they've captured some of these things incidental to combat.
Now, the Russian troops are being portrayed as being stalled, and we see the tanks outside the city, and they're, you know, the tanks aren't rolling. They're they're stationary, and they're encamped, and they built up the, you know, little protection sandbags, things around them like that. So what does that mean in terms of what's next? Are they going to be able to get into the cities, or do they just rely on these missile attacks?
So I recommend everybody go look at Putin's speech March 16th. And he outlines kind of his rationale for what they're doing. And anybody who reads that or watches his speech, it's very clear they're not stopping. He's going all the way. And what we see right now is a tactical pause. They're bringing up all sorts of resources. Got tanks on trains. They got troops on trucks. It's all coming forward. And I think they're going to make another very hard push sometime in the very near future to go and try to take some of these cities. There's a number right now that are under siege. They continue daily at barrages. And again, this is where we need to be seeing what the Russians are portraying, what they're doing in more detail, so we can make an assessment and see how, what, you know, if they're lying to us, let's see what they're saying in their lies. But that's the thing. At this point, it's very clear that Putin has played the nuclear card. If you read that speech, it's all about the fact that Ukraine was pursuing nuclear weapons. Where have we heard this before? And I think this is where he's going to justify everything he does to this very extreme, very nationalist view that the Ukrainians are about to become a nuclear power and join NATO. And that's what they're going to use to justify this expanded continued siege of all these cities and move past the end of the month into next, probably as part of their combat operations.
So he holds a rally yesterday, has 200,000 cheering people. But from your contacts and people that you talk to, both in Europe and other sources you have, what's your sense of what's going on in Russia? We've heard reports of up to 15,000 have been arrested in anti-war protests. What's really going on over there?
Well, again, this is where we need to have, you know, just let the information go as best people can see. I think there's a clear dissent within the movement, within the Russian people, within some of the oligarchs, no doubt. But it's hard to see because you have this refusal to let people see what's going on. I do believe, Rick, for the most part, that the Russian people are still behind Putin, that the oligarchs are still behind Putin. The oligarchs are with them because they would be worried about who replaces him and if that person would be willing to cover up their wrongdoing. Remember, their system is based on corruption, and you always try to pick a guy to replace the guy in place now to make sure that he's not going to investigate you once he comes into power. I would argue if this thing drags much into April, I think you're going to see a much greater change of heart. Right now, they're sustaining the same percentage of casualties, that is to say, killed and wounded in combat, as they did during World War II in Kursk. Now, think about that. That was one of the most significant battles of World War II, and the Russians are taking that kind of casualty. But for the most part, they have conscripts going in. They're portraying this as a necessary and important military operation that's designed to protect the Russian Republic. And right now, so far, that messaging is working for Putin.
And there's a report out of the Ukrainian Defense Ministry that they claim 14,000 Russian troops have been killed.
Yeah.
Do you think that would be anywhere near that number?
Yeah, like I said, the Kursk thing, they have significant casualties. I think the tank numbers are probably fairly accurate. But here's the thing. They've got 20,000 tanks. They've got a military that's as big as ours, or a population about half the size of ours. And they have not moved everything around they could to do it. I think we need to do what we're doing right now. We need to maintain pressure. We have three brigades in Poland, three of our best brigades with our best armor, the M1, A2 SEP-3s, which are the most advanced version. We have Marines exercising in Norway, 3,000. So we have to maintain a presence on our side. And let me say this for the record. Had Joe Biden done everything we've seen over the last 2 weeks, I don't believe for a minute Putin would have gone in had he shown that resolve and strength and provided all these weapons that we're now in the process of doing. And my other fear here, Rick, is that as much as they've appropriated money to do all this buying of stuff for the Ukrainians, there's no guarantee it's going to get there before the shooting stops or is going to be available for Zelensky to talk about his leverage against Putin once they start negotiating, which I would expect they're going to start trying to negotiate a peace to this towards the 1st of April.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, host of the Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. What's up this week?
So what we're talking about, we've been going through kind of what this all means, what it means for China. I think one of the biggest unknowns we have to focus on is how China is going to continue to either support or push away from Putin. I think they're going to double down and go with him. And we have to start looking at what this means for Taiwan sometime later this year. I don't think they're going to go. I don't think the Chinese are going to go right away. But I think the Chinese are going to go for Taiwan before Joe Biden's term ends as president.
Tony, thank you so much.
Sure, thank you.
You betcha. 7:46, Saturday morning update. WMAL, KT McFarland coming up next. But first, Albie D's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on the inner loop of the Beltway in Annandale, disabled vehicle right lane is blocked at exit 54. In Fairfax County on 66, no crashes or construction to tell you about, eastbound or westbound. In Montgomery County on the inner loop of the Beltway, accident has been cleared near Georgia Avenue. No delays being reported on the Beltway. And in Gaithersburg on 270 southbound, there is construction. Two lanes are blocked right at 370. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly cloudy skies this morning. A chance for a couple of isolated showers across the region. But as we head towards the afternoon, skies will clear. Temperatures warm into the mid and upper 70s ahead of a cold front. They'll shift through later on this afternoon and evening. There are a chance for a couple of storms later on this evening, closer to sunset. A few of those could be on the stronger side, something Stormwatch 7 will be watching very closely. Later on tonight, 40s and 50s across the region under mostly clear skies. Will be partly sunny to at times mostly cloudy on your Sunday. A little bit more cooler, but also seasonably so. High temperatures tomorrow around 60 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
58 degrees, 7:47, Saturday morning update. 7:48, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us each week. She was President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor. She is a board member of the American Conservative Union and, of course, the author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, an honor to have you with us.
An honor and a pleasure for me.
Well, thank you. In a video address, the Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has said, quote, meaningful, fair peace talks are needed urgently. He warned Moscow that Russian losses will otherwise be so huge it will take generations to recover. Negotiations on peace, on security for us, for Ukraine, meaningful, fair, and without delay. The words of President Zelensky today. And KT, if they get into peace negotiations, what do we need to consider? What are they both looking for?
Well, that's what I'm confused with. What is the ultimate goal here? Especially from the Biden administration, from the American position, is it Putin's utter defeat and withdrawal? You know, he couldn't survive politically at home if he brings the troops back in utter humiliation. I mean, he'll escalate to weapons of mass destruction before that happens. Is it number two? Is it regime change in Russia? I mean, do we hope for a palace coup, an assassination, a popular uprising? Look, the oligarchs can't push Putin out. They're not even in the country. And it seems unrealistic that Putin's tightly controlled inner circle is going to push him out. So is the goal then a stalemate and then a negotiated solution? I think Zelensky really set that up. I mean, he basically came out last week and said that NATO is off the table. Then the Russians made a lot of other demands. But their main demand, Russia's main demand even before, was that Ukraine would never join NATO. So Zelensky seems to have already conceded that point. to me, that's the beginning of a negotiation, because otherwise, what's the answer here? Well, we all stand by while Putin levels Ukraine like he did Chechnya and Grozny. And now that Putin has reportedly used hypersonic missiles, any idea of an air defense or no-fly zone, well, that's no longer relevant. He's already moved past it.
Hmm. So what is our role? What do you see the U.S. doing in these peace negotiations?
Well, I'm not sure. Is this maybe one of the topics of conversation when President Biden talked to President Xi of China yesterday? Maybe did they talk about a role that China might play? Certainly, according to the statements that they both released, or at least that the American side released, we warned them, don't get involved, don't pick on one side, don't give the Russians money, don't give the Russians weapon systems. And the Chinese, you know, they're in an odd position, Rick, because they're having right before the invasion at the beginning of the Olympics, the Russians and the Chinese signed this joint statement pledging eternal friendship and no limits to their cooperation and their alliance. And now all of a sudden, you know, Russia's gone, Putin has gone from being an international strongman a couple of weeks ago to an international pariah. Mm. And does China really want to get saddled with that friendship? So I don't know who the good negotiator is or whose good offices encourage the negotiation. The Chinese, the Russians and the Ukrainians are already talking, but is there pressure being brought to bear on either side? Are we pressuring the Ukrainians? Are the Chinese pressuring the Russians to come to a solution? Or are they on it on their own?
Let's talk about the role of energy in this and how that plays out with the sanctions the U.S. is imposing. Moving forward, is that a weapon for us?
You know, it's always been about energy, and it's my hobby horse. I've been talking about it for decades. When we won the Cold War, one of the ways that Reagan won the Cold War, and I was at the Pentagon, so I saw it firsthand, Reagan convinced the Saudis to pump more oil. So what did that do? It drove the price of oil from $40 a barrel to $18 a barrel in 9 months, and that bankrupted Russia. So Russia has only one export, is one way of making money, and that's to export oil and natural gas. You know, we think about the profits in the United States. Well, our energy industries are owned privately. And so at about $40 a barrel of oil, they can make money on that. They can make a profit, particularly after fracking. Our oil and natural gas companies make a profit when prices are really low. For the Russians, it's very different. Their energy companies are owned by the government, and the revenues from those exports, they pay for everything. I mean, they pay for military buildups. They pay for invasions. You know, if you look at the sort of the history of the last 50 years, when the price of oil has been high, the Russians have built up their military. They fought proxy wars. They've invaded countries. When the price of oil is low, the Russians stay home. They hunker down. So the most, I think the most potent weapon the United States, and only the United States, has right now is to unleash our energy industry. You know, stop this war on fossil fuels that President Biden initiated. Go back to where we were when Trump was president. Drive the price of oil and natural gas way down, bankrupt Russia, and so Vladimir Putin won't be able to afford to stay in Ukraine, and he certainly won't afford to be able to invade other countries down the road. He'll be broke. You know, wars are expensive, and occupations are expensive. Take away the piggy bank.
And what role would China play in terms of energy and Russia? Would they purchase what we're not purchasing?
Well, are we the West? Yeah, I've got to assume that one of the things, in fact, in their joint statement that they signed at the beginning of the Olympics, there was some language in there about, you know, with a trade relationship between the two. And I've got to assume that China had said to Russia, we've got your back. You know, we'll take all the energy that if the West sanctions you or stops buying your energy, we'll take it. We'd much rather have a pipeline going from Russia to China than to take energy that oil particularly that has to go by ships that are vulnerable to some kind of naval bombardment or naval attack. Far better to build a pipeline. So I'm assuming the Chinese, always very shrewd businessmen, have said to the Russians, we'll buy it, but we want it at breakneck, you know, we want it at bargain based on prices. So for the Chinese, you know, they've got it, they're in an odd position. They are now saddled to this international pariah, but on the other hand, they want to take advantage of the situation. So I really hope, though, that somebody in the White House is figuring out what's the off-ramp for this, because now that President Putin has used hypersonic weapons, I think he's shown that he's willing to escalate and escalate big if he doesn't get what he wants.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And I understand you're coming up on the Fox News channel in about 25 minutes from now at 8:20.
Tune in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick.
All right. My pleasure. That's it for the Saturday morning update. We've got the 8 o'clock news coming up with Heather Curtis, and then it's Garden Sense right here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.